Welcome to the PoliticalBetting.com Polling Matters show. My name is Kieran Pedley, and for the eagle-eyed amongst you, you'll notice that we're on the television screens today, which is all very, very exciting. But for those of you who think we may have the faces for radio, or maybe are just used to listening on your commute, don't worry, there'll still be audio too. But if you can bear us, let's crack on with the show. We've got an interesting packed show for you today. Later on, we're going to be talking about David Cameron's renegotiation of Britain's membership of the European Union and what that might mean for the inevitable referendum result. But first, we're going to talk about events across the pond, where this week, of course, the 2016 presidential hopefuls had their first taste of experience with the electorate at the Iowa caucuses, of course. Now, on the Republican side, Ted Cruz emerged victorious, as we know, but that wasn't the whole story, with Marco Rubio performing relatively well and Donald Trump finishing in second place. On the Democrat side, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders fought almost to a dead heat. So what does that mean? Does that mean that Bernie Sanders wins New Hampshire and maybe goes on to genuinely challenge Hillary Clinton? Or is it, again, a little bit more complicated than that? To try and decipher some of these messages and understand what's going on, I'm joined by fellow podcaster Leo Barassi, and editor of Noise of the Crowd. Leo, welcome.
Hello, Kieran.
And Mike Smithson, who's, of course, of PoliticalBetting.com. Mike, welcome.
Hello, good evening.
So let's talk a little bit about Iowa, guys. Leo, what did you make of the result on Monday?
Well, two things in particular. Firstly, I think this has been a reality check for the candidates on the radical insurgent side of both campaigns. So particularly for Trump and for on the Democratic side, for Sanders. So we have seen both of them having very deep, passionate support, very loud support, which made it seem like they're having really strong, effective campaigns. As soon as we had the votes in, we have seen the difficulty that both of them have on reaching beyond that. So Trump has really struggled to get beyond the people who passionately support him. For Sanders, perhaps slightly less so, but I think both of them have had some difficulty doing that. And then secondly, I think we're beginning to see possibly the emergence of a standard bearer on the Republican side for the people who really don't like Trump and don't like Cruz, in the form of Rubio. Perhaps a bit early to say that he's going to be the only one who can take on the other two, but I think that momentum is now building.
Let's look at the result. I mean, Mike, when we look at the slide, I think we've got about to come up here. So this shows obviously the vote share, but importantly the delegate counts, which is obviously what actually decides who the nominee eventually is. Who do you see as the big winners and losers? Do you agree with Leo there?
Yes, the big winner, I think, of that night was actually Bernie Sanders, because he was at all the polls beforehand had him 3-4% behind Hillary. He's taking on the very powerful Hillary Clinton machine and is actually equaling her. And that is an amazing thing. And to be able to say, I got a virtual tie, that takes him with great big momentum into New Hampshire next week, which is, and there he is leading in the polls. So that's a massive winner. The other big winner, of course, on the Republican side was Ted Cruz, to take it from, again, he was several points behind Donald Trump in most of the final polling, and to have that sort of margin, it wasn't just the victory by a narrow lead, but by such a majority, that was actually a great big victory, and I think he can look more confidently at the future of the campaign. But the other big winner in all of this is Marco Rubio. I mean, essentially, the Republicans are desperately trying to find a viable candidate who is not Donald Trump, somebody that the establishment of the party can get behind. And I think Rubio did that. The big losers, of course, are people like Jeb Bush, who was the major odds-on favourite come 4 or 5 months ago, until Trump really got going. He's now completely out of it.
I mean, Leo, what do you see about Donald Trump? Because he doesn't like losers, does he? He doesn't like coming runner-up, and yet here he is in Iowa as runner-up. Do we think that the halo slipped a little bit?
Yeah, it's a real challenge for him. His campaign is built on the argument that he's a winner, and so far there had been nothing to challenge him. Now that's going to be a lot more difficult. I would take a slight issue with something that Mike said about Sanders, and I think that sort of depends on how we judge him. If we see him as the establishment has seen him, as a no-hope proper outsider, then I completely agree that fighting Hillary to a standstill is a great result. But on the other hand, Iowa had the demographics that really favoured him. I think it was around the fifth best state for him. If he can't beat Hillary there, then at the moment, as opinion stands, then it looks like he's going to struggle in others. So it's sort of very, very, very good performance for an outsider. But as a potential winner of the contest, then it seems like he's still got a way to go.
I think Nate Silver actually said that, you know, they ranked at 538 over in America, they ranked the states by how Bernie friendly that they were. And obviously his home state of Vermont was number one. I think New Hampshire was number two. And I forget whether Iowa was three or four, but it was certainly in the top five. So maybe he's a bit fortunate in terms of those early states. We haven't talked much about Donald Trump, who, of course, was all the rage. There was petitions in Parliament about whether he should be banned from entering the country. I mean, what state do we see his campaign in at the moment, Mike?
I think it's in a complete state of flux. That campaign has to win in New Hampshire next week. And also has to win not just by a small margin, has to win significantly. Poll tonight just coming out has him 20% ahead, which is very much in line with what we've been seeing. And if he doesn't win from that polling position, people simply will not believe his poll ratings. And I think that he will then start to dismiss. There was a report of some national polling taking place where he is down quite considerably. Now, in America, they do things very differently from here. The pollsters tweet after their first night, tweets after his first night of field work and said, this is where we are, we're seeing Trump right down nationally. Of course, in this, of course, we've got to remember, this is not a national contest. This is 50 different state contests to register their votes for the nominee over a period of 5 months. But again, it's indicative.
And it feeds into the narrative, doesn't it? Yeah. If polls are coming out showing that he's slipping, then he's going to struggle.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to look ahead to the race and the dynamics behind it. I mean, Leo, you mentioned earlier, of course, that you thought that Marco Rubio might be emerging as the standard bearer for the so-called moderates within the GOP. But is there a risk that we're not seeing the wood from the trees here? I mean, after all, Ted Cruz did win Iowa. And actually, if you look at the crowded race that is the GOP race for president, actually, he's got there is a path there for the presidency, well, at least for the nomination for Ted Cruz. If we are to assume that people like Kasich and Bush maybe remain in the race longer than we might have anticipated, and perhaps people like Ben Carson drop out, you can see how with the amassing of Ben Carson's votes, maybe eating into Donald Trump's too, you know, Ted Cruz could do very well. And when we bear in mind that actually looking ahead to Super Tuesday, there's a lot of southern states there, including his home state of Texas, a very committed evangelical base. So maybe is there a risk that we're almost trying to look too far ahead of ourselves when actually Ted Cruz has got a really good shot at the nomination? I mean, Leo, what do you think?
I think that seems very fair. And to add to what you said, one of the real unknowns is, suppose that Trump isn't able to turn around the beginning of the decline in his numbers and takes his ball away and says, right, I've had enough, I'm pulling out sooner than another candidate might, then where do his supporters go? And truth is, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, they are very particular kind of people. It's not clear that Cruz is going to match what they want, but it's certainly not clear that Rubio is either.
One of the things about the Iowa Republican caucus is that it is a very religious state. I think the levels of evangelical Christians, the levels of regular church going are probably as high as anywhere in the US. And the winner of the caucuses is usually a very strong has a very strong religious pitch. Happened with Huckabee in 2008. It happened with Rick Santorum in 2012. And it's happened again with Ted Cruz in 2016. So again, that underpins it. And very few other states have got the same level of religious population. Mm-hmm. So I think it's that's why it is actually slightly unique.
I want to move on to the referendum shortly, but before we do, one of the so-called losers that we didn't maybe talk about during our first segment was the pollsters. Of course, we know in the UK, obviously, that polling's had a bit of a difficult time of late, I think it's probably fair to say. Whereas, of course, the Des Moines Register poll last weekend showed that Donald Trump was going to win and Ted Cruz wasn't. I mean, I'm going to defend the pollsters here a little bit, because I think one of the things that people need to bear in mind is that often the sample sizes of sort of caucus caucus-goers, if you like, or the people in polls of caucus-goers, is around 600 or so, margin of error of 4 points either way. So maybe in respect of that Trump sort of 5-point lead or so that he had on Saturday night, we should have seen that as more of a neck-and-neck race, notwithstanding the fact that the universe that you're trying to poll there is actually very, very difficult. Mm. But at the same time, when we're looking ahead to these polls in the other states, that were New Hampshire and South Carolina and others, I mean, would we be sensible to maybe be a bit wary about what the headline figures are saying?
I think you've got to distinguish between caucus states, where it's people go along, they don't just go and vote, they go and attend a meeting, and they've got to be there at a certain time, and they've got to stay the whole meeting before they can vote at the end. And trying to identify caucus goers is actually a massive challenge for a pollster. I think you'll find that as we go on through this campaign, that the states which decide on their nominee choices by caucus, you're going to see very little polling. It is just too difficult to do. And most of the polling will be focused where you've got full primaries, like in New Hampshire next week, where the actual electoral process is run by the state authorities, and it's a proper election in the same way that the election will be in November when they elect the president. It's a proper election.
Sure. Let's move on to events close to home. Obviously, this week, David Cameron's announced the terms of the renegotiation of Britain's membership of the EU. We're going to talk about the polling in a moment. But, Leo, what was your take on David Cameron's speech a couple of days ago? I mean, how confident do you think he should feel in his strategy right now?
Well, what Cameron knows is the key to winning the referendum is persuading lots of people who are currently wavering towards leave that he has had a successful renegotiation. The polls are very clear that the Remain lead is much greater if people are prompted with Cameron has come back with renegotiated terms. So what he's trying to do is say, I went and argued with Europe and I came back with better terms. It's sort of like he did during the election campaign when people were saying that he isn't showing enough passion. So he did a very well briefed speech where he rolled up his sleeves and said, I'm really passionate.
And, everyone said,
oh, yes, he's very passionate. And he's clearly going for the same thing here where he said, I'm going to renegotiate. He came back and said, I've renegotiated, and has sort of expected people to say, oh, yes, you've renegotiated. Clearly, the press reaction this week hasn't been as positive as the government would have liked. But that said, they haven't really yet faced anyone surprising who's come out against them. I think so far it's only the people you'd expect to who have said that it's not been enough. So at the moment, I would imagine they're feeling reasonably confident. Mm.
Before we move on to what impact we think the renegotiations might have on the polls, let's look at some of the polling. I mean, Mike, you've been looking at some analysis, which I think is going to come up in a moment, which shows the difference between telephone and online polls in terms of the EU referendum question. Now, I think this chart is relatively self-explanatory, but what have you been noticing?
Yes, I mean, what we're seeing is that the online polls are showing that the race is very, very narrow, 1-2% between Leave and Remain, whereas those polls which carried out by telephone, you see a very massive gap which Remain having a lead of 20-25%. Now that is completely inexplicable, and it is very hard to come to a firm view about which one is right. At the general election, the study that took place at the general election post of the polling failure did not meet have any overall view on which was better, phone polls or online polls. But it was the case that of the phone polls during the campaign, just 2, 10%. Actually showed Labour ahead, whereas the online polls, 56% of them had Labour ahead.
But these are very different types of polls. Westminster voting intention obviously ended up very, very close, regardless of whether it was online or telephone, whereas there is evidently a modal difference here. It'll be interesting to see whether that actually maintains itself. I mean, Leo, as a pollster, you know, what could be some of the reasons behind this? I mean, like one imagines that on the telephone, you've got maybe an interviewer that you're speaking to, the other you're in front of a computer screen. What sort of impact does that have?
Well, it could be, as you hinted, something about the social acceptability of what you say. So perhaps when people are talking to an interviewer, they feel that they need to say that they want to stay in. To be honest, I'm not so convinced by that. I feel like the most likely explanation for this is quite similar to the explanation that's being used for the election, which is you're getting different kinds of people who take online polls. it seems, are generally a bit more engaged, more knowledgeable, and a bit more fired up about the issues. People who take phone polls, again, have certain characteristics, the kind of people who are prepared to take a poll on the phone. One of the interesting things that I think we might see with this is, with such a big gap, it seems at the moment perhaps relatively unlikely that they'll come together in the way that they did at the last minute during the election. So perhaps this time we'll see for the first time whether one of them is actually better than the other.
I mean, Mike, what's your judgment here? I mean, which of these do you think is closer to the real picture? I mean, you can't know for certain, of course, but what does your sort of spidey sense tell you?
Well, I do recall that the European elections in 2014, that the online pollsters, with bar one, were all showing leads for UKIP, which were sometimes considerably bigger than the overall vote share that UKIP got in that election. So there is a sense, and also you do see it ongoing Westminster voting polling during the general election, Westminster voting polling that we're seeing since the general election. Online polls are producing bigger figures for UKIP, and maybe there is that engagement of the UKIP support community that gets themselves involved in signing up for polling panels. Of course, with a phone poll, it's allegedly sort of randomised dialing, and you should get a more representative sample. The problem is that to produce a sample of 1,000 for a phone poll, they probably need to make 10, 12,000 phone calls. Mm. And so the nature of the people who respond to them are obviously going to be not necessarily as normal as perhaps we'd like to be.
I want to close today by thinking about what impact we think the renegotiations that we've seen this week might have on the actual outcome and maybe the polls in the short term. We haven't had a lot of polling so far in the aftermath of David Cameron's renegotiation, but we have had something from Sky, which is a poll of their subscribers weighted to be nationally representative, 1,000 people. So, you know, we could talk a little bit about that. But we've had 69% saying that this deal that David Cameron has negotiated is bad, and 44% saying that it makes them less likely to vote Remain. Now, my instinct, Leo, is to be slightly sceptical about whether this will actually move the dial in terms of whether the Remain, people veer Remain or leave, because what does being less likely to do anything really mean? Mm-hmm. But it does look like this is seen as a bad deal for Britain, and that could have lasting impacts, couldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, people tend to answer more or less likely questions in terms of what they were going to do anyway, so I'd be a bit suspicious about that part of it. But the good deal, bad deal numbers, certainly not very encouraging for the Remain side. I think at the very least this could prove to be a missed opportunity if the polls had suggested, as they had, that Remain could have a sort of 10-15 point boost, if not more, from a good renegotiation. If this has turned out to be a bit of a damp squib in the public's eyes, then perhaps it might not go down, but they might have missed that chance to solidify the lead.
I mean, I want to close today with sort of a buy or sell idea. So, you know, I would personally, if I was looking at the US presidential race, I would buy shares in Hillary Clinton and probably buy them in Ted Cruz, actually, as well. I mean, I accept the arguments about Marco Rubio and maybe he becoming the moderate standard bearer. Mm. Certainly something to watch, but he's ultimately won the first test. So I still think that's important. But very briefly, as we close, I mean, Leo, who would you, on the EU referendum side maybe, and also the US presidential side, who would you buy and who would you sell?
Key point on the US Democratic side. I've wondered whether Sanders is the American Corbyn. I think there's a key difference. Corbyn won an election of about 420,000 people. It's about 1% of the UK population. Very unusual, very engaged people. To win, Sanders is going to have to win a contest of more like 40 million people. That's how many votes in 2008. That's more like 15-20%. He'll have to get through to a completely different set of people from the ones Corbyn won. With that, I'd suggest that Iowa continues to point towards Hillary.
And Mike, what do you think? Who are you buying and selling on the EU referendum, but also the US race?
Well, on the EU referendum, I still think it's going to be Remain. I believe the phone polls are probably closer to it than the online polls. I think that the commitment of David Cameron to it is going to be absolutely enormous. He's somebody who has an influence that we've seen in poll after poll way beyond the conservative base. And he's also very influential with the conservative base. And I think if he's saying, well, this is good for Britain, this protects our security, I think that will help Remain. U.S. race. I think Rubio is going to get the Republican nomination, and I think that we're going to see an interesting fight for the Democrats. But I think Clinton will end up successful.
Well, thank you both for joining me. And that's all we've got time for on this week's Polling Matters PoliticalBetting.com podcast live, so to speak. I hope you've enjoyed the new format. If you did like what you've seen and what you've heard, do share it with others. It does help us get our voice out there. But for now, thank you to Leah, thank you to Mike, and stay tuned for some more episodes in the coming weeks.